It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
So what I like to tell people, people often call me the animal rights lawyer, and I am not an animal rights lawyer because animals don't have rights, but they have protections under our law. You can't do anything that is violent toward them. You can't beat them. You can't mutilate them. You can't torture them. You can't inflict inhumane injury on them. You can't shoot them just at your whim if you don't like a dog.
Assistant Attorney General Michelle Welch, head of the nation's first Attorney General's Animal Law Unit, talks about animal welfare, animal abuse, and your rights as a consumer under Bailey's Law when you buy a pet. And during this week's News You Can Use, we'll tell you about the 2015 SNAP Challenge and the need for action. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 277, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and online at www.wrir.org and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. How do you afford to eat on a budget of just $4 per day? Such a tight budget may seem unlivable, but it is the reality of nearly 920,000 individuals in Virginia who receive Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, benefits, formerly called food stamps. Experiencing this difficulty was one of the main goals of the SNAP Challenge, as participants learned firsthand last month. When living on a SNAP budget, where you grocery shop can be just as important as what you buy. Many SNAP Challenge participants have the ability to shop at multiple stores in their area to stretch their budget, but this is often not an option for SNAP recipients. Many individuals who receive SNAP benefits struggle with food accessibility due to food deserts and wide disparities in food costs across the country. This means that grocery stores may be difficult to access, and their prices can further stretch the already tight SNAP budget. To a SNAP recipient with limited access to food providers, high prices and low benefits can make it extremely difficult to get adequate nutrition on a SNAP budget. This problem can be addressed by increasing SNAP benefits to better enable individuals to afford the food they need. A recent report detailed that SNAP benefit increases helped to reduce food insecurity rates during the Great Recession, while the premature benefit cuts in 2013 increased the likelihood of both household and child food insecurity. This finding shows that the amount of SNAP benefits matters and that food insecurity rates can be reduced if SNAP benefits are increased. The slow reduction of national food insecurity rates, only 0.4% from 2013 to 2014, is a clear sign that SNAP reform is needed. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's report last month, 15.4% of Americans, or 48.1 million people, lived in households that were struggling against hunger in 2014. Increases in SNAP benefits have been shown to greatly enhance food accessibility for SNAP recipients, while SNAP reductions have been detrimental to millions of Americans. It is clear that SNAP benefit increases are needed and beneficial. In Virginia, almost 70% of all SNAP participants are in families with children. Almost 31% of all SNAP participants are in families with elderly or disabled members, and almost 41% of all SNAP recipients are in working families. SNAP reform will best support individuals who rely on food assistance, and the change is needed now. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the offices of the Attorney General of Virginia, and we are speaking with Michelle Welch. She is an Assistant Attorney General and the Director of the Animal Law Unit, and we will be talking about animal law, animal rights, why the unit was formed, what they do, and some of their cases and successes. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's nice to be here. And I am told that the Animal Law Unit is the first of its kind amongst offices of attorneys general in the United States. So could you tell our listening audience, why was this unit formed in the first place?
Well, the Attorney General is very committed to animal welfare and making sure that animals are treated well and correctly. And the other thing that has kind of evolved over time. When I first came here, I was one of the first animal abuse prosecutors in Virginia, and I was at a prosecutor's office then. And then I came to the Attorney General's office, and it kind of followed me here. And so I was giving advice, and the current Attorney General had seen that because we were involved in special prosecutions that were going on around the state. Notably, in Wise County, we just did a big cockfighting case that crossed state lines into Kentucky that we did with the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Western District. And so the more this Attorney General saw what we were doing, he felt like it needed to be more formal. And he felt like there needed to be consistent advice given to state agencies and consistent advice given to prosecutors across the Commonwealth. And so he decided to form the unit.
Now, of course, most people have probably heard about Michael Vick and the dogfighting ring and everything of that nature. Just how large a problem is animal abuse either in Virginia or nationwide?
It's a significant problem, and the way we know this is that we find pit bulls are usually the dog of choice in animal fighting rings, and we find them all over the Commonwealth in shelters, and they have dog fighting scars. We also often are investigating others for drug activity or gang activity, and we find animals, especially pit bulls, that have been fought. And that's one way we get to investigate these crimes, is that they're investigating them for another kind of collateral crime, and they discover the animals, and they call in animal control, or they call in our office to help them. And we investigate it, and we realize that there is a definite link between animal violence and human violence. And often, if you have one, you have other things going on. For instance, in the case I was talking about in Wise County, we had drug dealing going on in that pit, and the pit was actually in Kentucky, and we prosecuted them in Virginia for the crimes because they cross state lines. So we see it over and over again, and in nationwide it's a huge problem, especially in the bigger cities for dogfighting, but cockfighting is also still such a huge problem in the rural jurisdictions as well.
And it sounds like this is sort of, I guess I would call it a gateway crime, where something can lead to something else. And you'd mentioned its impact on people. Could you talk more about the link between animal abuse and domestic violence and family abuse?
Yes, we see that over and over again. You know, domestic violence is all about power over the victim. And often the abusers will use the animal to either make the woman stay or to get control of the victim in a way that they will not tell. We've had a child victim who was, the dog was shot with a bow and arrow to keep her silence because she was being sexually abused. In domestic violence, often they will lash out. The first strike like is at the pet in the family, so that they lash out at the pet to get control over the victim. Often victims will not leave perpetrator because they don't want to leave the animal behind for fear of what's going to happen to that animal. So it's a way to control, a way to buy their silence, and to exert power over the victim.
And so does the Attorney General's office or perhaps local law enforcement try to work in concert with, let's say, local veterinarians to try to get some kind of early warning system for animal abuse that could be leading to domestic abuse?
In April, we had a conference that was geared toward law enforcement, animal control, and domestic violence advocates, really highlighting the link between pet abuse and domestic violence and kind of giving them what should you do if you see these sort of things. We've created a card that we're going to be sending out to domestic violence advocates and law enforcement that if you see this, like if you see an animal that's tied in the back of the house and it looks like it's on a chain and it looks like there's feces or there's no water, the dog looks emaciated, what should you do? Call animal control. If an animal is fearful, you're in a house with someone that you suspect may be being abused by their partner, and the animal's cowering, the animal is fearful in some way, this is what you should do. So this is what these cards will do. We're going to send them out across Virginia to try to help and try to make sure that people understand that link between animal violence and human violence.
And so if a member of the public suspects some animal abuse, to whom should that be reported? You listed a number of possibilities there. To whom should it be reported?
Okay, so if it's an emergency where you see an animal being beaten or tortured in some way, you really should call 911 first. But if it's more of a neglect issue or a suspicion, you should call your local animal control first, and they will investigate, and then they'll build the case against whoever it is.
So what are the laws in Virginia? I assume there are laws in Virginia that deal specifically with how animals must be treated and how they may not be treated. What are those, just in brief?
So what I like to tell people often call me the animal rights lawyer, and I am not an animal rights lawyer because animals don't have rights, but they have protections under our law. You can't do anything that is violent toward them. You can't beat them. You can't mutilate them. You can't torture them. You can't inflict inhumane injury on them. You can't shoot them just at your whim if you don't like a dog. So if you do that, that's a class one misdemeanor. If the animal dies, then that's a class six felony, which is 1 to 5 years in prison. The class one misdemeanor is punishable up to 12 months in jail. If it's something else, and this is where I talk about basically deprivation, if you think someone is neglecting their dog, under our law, animals have protections. They have to have adequate water. They have to have adequate food. They have to have adequate shelter. They have to have veterinary care. You can't just own a dog and not do anything for it. You have to provide for it. Much like a child, you wouldn't just neglect your child. You can't neglect your dog.
And does that apply to all animals kept as pets? I mean, dogs, cats, rabbits, snakes, all animals kept as
yes.
pets?
Yes. In Virginia, our neglect statute, our adequate care statute, applies to companion animals. And the short term for you for that is anything that is a companion is a companion animal. So an exotic bird like a cockatiel would be a companion animal. A hamster would be a companion animal. Anything that is your companion is a companion animal.
Now, what would you say in response to animal rights advocates who say, well, animals have rights, or at least they should have rights?
Well, that's for the Virginia General Assembly to decide. Obviously, I don't make law. The Attorney General, will weigh in on laws when he deems it necessary, but the General Assembly has to decide whether an animal should have rights. And right now, in the whole nation, no animal is considered a person. No animal has rights. They have protections under almost every single state has some type of animal cruelty or animal neglect law.
So what type of services, activities is your animal law unit involved in?
So right now, to date, we started the unit in January. We've given either 100, we're up to 150 different things that we've done, either trainings to the general public. We did an animal fighting conference, the first ever in Virginia, out in Southwest. We did the domestic violence link conference with our partners in the domestic violence world. And we are about to do a hoarding conference to talk about the problem of hoarding and the fact that it's a mental illness. People will hoard animals and have excess of 30 to 100 animals in their house. And so we want to try to educate people about that. And we're having another domestic violence conference in Southwest Virginia. So in addition to the trainings that we're doing, and obviously as the director, I go out and I train a lot of law enforcement and animal control and prosecutors. We're also giving advice. We're sitting second chair on some cases. And we will also, if the prosecutor wants us to come in as a special prosecutor, we will do that. We also give quite a lot of advice to our state agencies, because that's what the Attorney General's main focus is giving advice to our state agencies. And so we want to make sure that we give consistent advice to our partner agencies.
Now, you mentioned a very interesting issue, animal hoarding, which, of course, again, another gateway symptom that can show that the person is hoarding and has some sort of hoarding mental illness. I'm sure there's no bright line here, but when does it cross the line where so many animals becomes animal hoarding as you would conceive it?
Well, the way you know it crosses the line is the conditions that you find the animals in. You know, many people who live in the country, they may have 10, 20 animals, but a lot of them may be living outside. Where it crosses the line is when you cannot clean up behind every single animal you have. That's where it crosses the line. We'll go into a house that may have 30 cats and there's feces on the ground. The animals are suffering from urine scald because they're staying in cages. Same thing with dogs. If you have too many dogs, you're not cleaning up the feces behind them, the urine behind them. They're not getting clean food and clean water. And often, and this is why we're having a conference on it, is that hoarding is a mental illness in many ways. And so we want to try to educate providers in how to deal with hoarding and try to get a hold of it before it becomes a problem. In some horrific cases, we'll go in and there'll be 200 animals, 100 of them are dead and in Rubbermaid containers. So we want to try to give that person mental health treatment before they actually have to go to court and be prosecuted for animal cruelty.
And if a member of the public believes that someone is an animal hoarder, they see the types of things that you have just described, again, to whom should they report that?
So animal hoarding, you really should report it to animal control or your building code inspectors, because again, it kind of crosses the line. A lot of animal hoarders are also paper hoarders, and I think you've seen the show Hoarding. And they're basically being buried alive by their paper because something has happened to them that is tragic, and for whatever reason, keeping that piece of paper will give them some kind of comfort. Same thing with animals. They start out with very good intentions. They love animals, but something clicks in their brain and they think that they're the only ones that can save those animals. And a lot of times the hoarder won't even see the cruelty they're perpetrating on the animal victim. So you really should call animal control first and building code as well.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was a fairly new law in Virginia. It's on the civil side. It's really a consumer protection statute, and it's called Bailey's Law. I understand it's named after a beagle named Bailey. Would you tell us about Bailey's Law?
So Bailey's Law was brought forth by humane groups, and it was trying to get at the problem of puppy mills. Many people who sell puppies are getting them from dealers that may not be as reputable as we would like. Often, I'll say in Virginia, we have a commercial breeder law that has really done what its intention was, to make sure we don't have puppy mills. And so a puppy mill or a commercial breeder that is not as reputable is basically breeding the mother and the mothers, the adult dogs, to the point that they're breeding them to death. and they are churning out puppies. And so what Bailey's Law is intended to do is to give the consumer the information to know where that puppy came from. Whether it, you know, there are other states that have more, not as great laws as we do in Virginia. And so they have a commercial breeder problem. And so what Bailey's Law does is it tells the consumer where that puppy came from. It's kind of tracing it back. And I will say, if you are going to buy an animal or buy a puppy, you really should ask to see where the mom and dad are and see what kind of conditions they're living in.
So this Bailey's Law, first of all, to whom does it apply? Does it apply only to pet stores? Does it apply to all pet sales? Who does it apply to?
It's primarily pet stores, and they have to put on the cage of where the puppy is, where the puppy came from, what kennel or what breeder they bought it from.
And which animals does it apply to? Is it just dogs, or is it dogs and cats, or again, what animals would this law apply to?
Primarily, it's just dogs, and they have to give you the source of where the animal came from.
And is there some sort of consumer protection right here, where if the animal is ill, then the consumer has certain rights within a certain period of time?
Within a certain time frame, they have to tell the pet store that they bought it from, or the person they got it from, that the puppy is ill, and they have to exercise that right so that they can get either, they can keep the animal and get the veterinary costs up until that point paid for, or they can return the animal and get their money back.
And would I be correct to say that this needs to be supported by some sort of report from a veterinarian?
Yes, you have to. You can't just say the puppy's ill. You have to have taken it to a vet, and you have to have a certificate from the vet about what's wrong with the animal.
And you mentioned also a commercial breeder's law in Virginia. This also is new to me. I assume that's separate and apart from the Bailey's Law, the consumer protection law that we've been talking about?
Yes, and it was enacted in about 4 to 5 years ago. And it basically, you can't have more than 30 adult female dogs. If you do, then the animal control has a right of entry to look at your animals and make sure that they're being provided for. In the more disreputable establishments, they don't have any vet records for those dogs. They've never taken the dog that they have breeded over and over again to the vet. And so what the commercial breeder law does is it makes sure that you have record keeping so that we know that you're actually providing for all of those dogs in your care.
And to whom does the commercial breeder law apply? I mean, is it anyone who breeds an animal and sells the offspring?
Yes, and you have to, like I said, the number is 30 adult female dogs. I think the total number you can have is 50. But if 30 of those dogs are adults, females, then you are subject to the commercial breeder law.
And so is this, again, part of the animal law unit's responsibility to see that that law gets enforced, or at least to provide technical assistance to localities that do that?
So the one thing about the unit I want to make clear about is that we don't have any new power. You know, the Attorney General's office has finite things that we can prosecute, and it's all listed in code. What we do is provide technical assistance, or if the local Commonwealth's attorney wants us to come in and either handle the case or sit as a second chair of the case, or just give them advice. I get that call almost every day. They say, well, I've got this case. These are the facts. What would you do? And that's what we do. We give them advice. As far as the commercial breeder law, that would be enforced by local animal control, the locality, and then by the prosecutor, the Commonwealth's attorney who wants to handle the case. But we would give technical assistance on it.
Well, so it sounds like you have more than enough to handle on your plate.
I do. It's been a really great year, and I'm so thankful to the Attorney General for creating the unit, because it really is a game changer. It gives people, a person here or a unit here. I have three lawyers, you know, that are helping me, that we can go help them if they need it. And it's not that animal cases are all that complicated. It's that a lot of jurisdictions haven't ever done an animal fighting case, a cockfighting case, a dog fighting case. And so just being able to give them help, and it's very gratifying for the unit to do that, because we're passionate about animals, and we really do believe that animals should be protected under the law.
Well, thank you very much. We have been speaking with Michelle Welch. She is a Senior Assistant Attorney General and the Director of the newly formed Animal Law Unit at the Office of the Attorney General of Virginia. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, is the largest animal rights organization in the world. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when attorney Rachel Matthews at the PETA Foundation's Captive Animal Law Enforcement Unit explains why animals are not ours to eat, wear, experiment on, use for entertainment, or abuse in any way. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wakeman. Oh.